Welcome to the RSP Cast. I'm Matt Waldman with the Rookie Scouting Portfolio, and thank you for listening. This has been really an excellent year for the Rookie Scouting Portfolio in terms of expanding to having a newsletter for subscribers and starting this podcast. I've gotten a lot of great reviews of this podcast, and I appreciate that. If you are listening to this podcast on a regular basis, and if you haven't rated and reviewed it on iTunes, I would appreciate it. It does help out in terms of me understanding, who's listening, what you like about it, what you'd like to see different about it. You can certainly email me at mattwaldmanrsp@gmail.com if you'd like to give me more extensive commentary there. I appreciate that as well. Today, we're going to do a solo podcast, and we're going to talk about my most intriguing skill player prospects of the 2019 NFL draft season. And so how I'm going to define that, it's not so much based on always, the most talented guys. Some of these guys are under the radar prospects. Most of them, I think, are kind of under the radar in certain regards, or there's something going on with their pre-draft situation that, may cloud the picture in terms of their draft stock. So I thought it would be fun just based on the film study I've done, and I've watched over 180 players, I think about 185 skill position players, quarterback, running back, wide receiver, and tight end. And that's more than I've probably ever watched for a Rookie Scouting Portfolio. I think the most I've ever done for the RSP is around 179 players. You guys, you who listen to me on this podcast, who buy the RSP publication, you've gotten me home from doing three jobs. So now I can make my priority the RSP. And as you can see, I'm trying to fulfill that promise by giving you the best possible information and increase the volume of work I do and broaden the scope of the work that I do so that you benefit. So I want to thank you very much as we get into this draft season for what you've done to give me the opportunity to do even more with the Rookie Scouting Portfolio. So getting into this, these players, who are some of them? I think we're going to cover probably 5 to 6, depending on the amount of time that we have here. And the first guy that comes to mind is someone who I'm interested in him and find him intriguing because he's about 5'8", 200 pounds. He's a running back. And there are a lot of backs in this draft who are in that 5'8", 5'9", 200 to 205 pound range. Scat backs like Travion Williams is a good example of one of those guys who a lot of people are talking about as Patrick Laird is in that range, maybe a little bit higher up on the, on that, or guys like James Williams at Washington State, who else? Darrell Henderson, 5'9", 200 pounds. He's another one that a lot of people are talking about. Guys who, are very agile, have big playability, can catch the ball out of the backfield. Can they be that every down back in a spread offense? Could they be an every down back in just more pass heavy offenses of the NFL that we've seen that have become more and more of the trend? Or are they more likely the James White type of player? Now, there are certainly a contingent of analysts who believe that James White could be an every down player. That's a discussion for another time. But one of those players that intrigues me a lot among those list of those 5'8", 5'9", 200, 205 pound backs is Utah State's Darwin Thompson. And I talked a little bit about him in the Roster Watch podcast. And what I said about that, if you missed it, is that right now, if I were to make a comp about his style of play that I've seen, like a low end comp, I'd say he's more in the scope of what Duke Johnson delivers or Chase Edmonds or Austin Eckler, guys who can catch the ball in the backfield. They are competent between the tackles in terms of you can run plays with them there. You may not, there may be some teams that are reticent to use them 15, 18, 20 times a game, ramming them into the line of scrimmage, which you don't see very often with most NFL offenses anyhow, but you're not looking at them as your bread and butter lead back in that type of an offense. But when I look at Thompson's game, what intrigues me about him is that he's very strong for his dimensions. When you look at his lower body, you see that well-developed core from basically the knees up to the waist, that bubble. He looks very strong, and he's one of those guys that when I watch him on tape, frequently I'm seeing him in situations where he's able to get a push against the defensive tackles, defensive ends, linebackers, winning the collision point on indirect and direct collisions. That doesn't mean running someone over. I've talked about this on Twitter a little bit, saying that when, from my experience, when backs and are not able to consistently win direct collisions against first and second level defenders, they tend not to be starters or high-end contributors in the NFL. And, you know, somebody recently asked me about that and said, well, do you have any data to back that up? And I do. I mean, I track all the data I do at the Rookie Scouting Portfolio publication. And so I looked at, just off the top to answer that, I looked at just 5 years of data and looked at over, I think, 180, over 180 players, and showed that overwhelmingly, just based on that skill set. And it doesn't mean that this is a statistical fact. It's just the data that I've tracked. And from the data that I've tracked, it does support the idea that, you know, the only back that I had listed who didn't succeed in that scoring in terms of being able to win a collision and still ended up being a starter was Marlon Mack. And I would argue that he's still kind of a part-time starter with, you know, Nyheim Hines and a couple other backs in the wings there. And you can see that when you look at Marlon Mack, since his days at South Florida, when he can get some momentum downhill, he can win collisions. And when I say winning a collision, it's not so much about running the guy over, but it's just getting a push. Can they bounce off the guy and get at least a yard or two and push the defender backwards? They don't have to run him over. They don't have to, you know, it's not about dropping your head or the crown of your helmet and doing anything dangerous or illegal. It's about just literally understanding how to use your pads, leverage, strength, and your burst to be able to maximize a push against the defender who's coming at you from the opposite direction directly at you. And there's ways to handle that. And sometimes it's even about hitting and spinning off of that contact. Because I've had people who've talked with me and said, well, what about Jamal Charles? He's an example of a guy who couldn't run somebody over. And again, it's not about running the guy over. Running the guy over can be a product of winning a direct collision, but it's not the only way that that happens. So I define that in the RSP along with every criteria point that I do. Darwin Williams, though, while he doesn't run people over, I've seen him repeatedly get pushes on defensive tackles and linebackers, and that's intrigued me. And it's intrigued me to the point that I know his high school coach, because I've had a chance to talk with him on Twitter, and his name is Dub Maddox. He is the writer of the R4 system, and he's a player. He's a coach that, you know, I'd recommend his work highly in terms of, you know, what he brings to the table about football knowledge and offensive systems. He's created this R4 system is kind of an overlay template that I've talked about in the past. It fits over any offense that helps quarterbacks and receivers really diagnose what's going on in the field quickly and helps coaches teach their system better to their players. So I asked Maddox, you know, what do you think of your former Jenks High School player? And he said to me that, I'm just going to quote you what he said. He said, he's one of those once in a coaching career kind of kids that you will coach. Now, again, Maddox is a high school coach and a big time speaker on the clinic circuit for teams, for, you know, high school coaches, college coaches. And he's a guy that I've heard often from people say that he should be a college coach at this point. You know, he's got that kind of talent. He said that Thompson has work ethic, mental toughness, and the coach ability that supports his talent. He's probably the most driven and focused athlete that I've coached. There's just nothing that was going to stop him from reaching the NFL. He's kind of had that Tom Brady chip on his shoulder in that he's had to take the hard road to get where he's at, meaning he's never just been declared the best at his position. He's had to prove he's the man at every level, and he's been at that at high school, JUCO, Division I, and now heading into the NFL. One of the single most impressive things about him is his work ethic and ability to lift weights in the weight room. He could probably be on the Olympic weightlifting team if he wasn't playing football. He still holds the all-time Jenks High School power clean record at 340 pounds, which is just unreal for a high school kid, as he mentioned. And again, 5'8", 200 pounds now, not where he was in high school. He was our team captain and a kid you would never have to worry about off field. He has one of those Navy SEAL type qualities that make them elite. He will be a kid that makes it somewhere, and somehow, no matter what happens in the draft, he's done it his whole life. Hope that helps. I just asked him, what can you tell me about him? You know, and I know that 3 to 5 years of growth is a huge deal in a young man's life. So I just wanted to ask what stood out about him. And he gave me all that. Now, let's remember, too, that I'm sure that he's used to having scouts ask him about players. You know, that's what happens. And also, I'm not a scout in the terms of for the NFL. So I'm more media. And as being more media, you know, you got to kind of keep that in mind when you're asking somebody a question about a player, that he's aware of that and knowing that I'm going to probably use that unless I said this is off the record. So, you know, even so, it sounds like Darwin Thompson is a heck of a kid, you know, and a hard worker. And you can see, you know, when he talked about his strength, that showed up on the field. And it's already very abundantly clear that he's fast. He's someone that has good acceleration, excellent footwork, and he can run gap. He can run zone. He's someone that catches the ball well. He can get into that open field. But the fact that he breaks tackles and pushes piles intrigues me, because even though he's 5'8", 200, could he be a little bit more than, you know, what Duke Johnson has shown thus far? Could he be a little more than what Chase Edmonds looks like he might be, or what Austin Eckler has shown? Could he be more like a Christian McCaffrey? Could he be more like an Ahmad Bradshaw type of player? That's what I'm interested in seeing. And part of that is I want to see what he does at the combine if he gets invited there. Is he going to be invited there? If not, what does he do in his pro day? What does his three cone look like? What does his bench press look like? What do, you know, some of the measurements that just kind of will help us get an idea of, is he the athlete that he looks like on tape? Because while I've seen him do things that were impressive against the New Mexico States of the world and maybe the, you know, the Boise States of the world and the BYUs, there's some differences between those teams, and also definitely differences between those teams in the NFL type of athlete. So that's a guy right off the bat when I look at, I have him pretty high in my running back rankings thus far, and surprisingly so, based on just what I've seen, you know, with a number of these backs. And, you know, it prompted me to reach out to Dub Maddox to ask him about him a little bit more, because I thought it would give me some insights. Am I seeing a guy as strong? You know, he looks strong on film. Am I seeing, is that a pattern about his game? Is that a pattern about who he's been? Or are my eyes fooling me a little bit? Am I not taking into account that he's playing, you know, even though he's, you know, running and pushing against defensive tackles at New Mexico State. And yes, those guys are over 300 pounds, or, you know, one of those guys was, that he was able to handle, you know, is that the caliber of athlete? You know, I kind of want to double check those types of things. And I want to look at every possible angle, because if I'm going to look at a guy who might be an outlier, I want to be pretty sure about the, you know, what I'm seeing there. And it's not just looking for confirmation of what I think based on the film. I want to explore also, you know, things that might counter that. I tried to do that a lot with Nick Chubb last year. I watched more film of Nick Chubb last year than any player I think I've ever studied, because I knew that me placing him as high as I did was going to be an outlier compared to the community and what the main thoughts were about him. And it's proven correct early on thus far. But again, you have to, in order to do that, you have to be rigorous about looking at things that may be opposite of your point of view and really try and consider them seriously and test them out. And I'm kind of in that area with Darwin Thompson. So he's very intriguing to me. I hope he ends up at the combine and we can see how he performs. If not, I'll be very interested in what he does at his pro day. Moving on to the next guy, you know, who else are we looking at here that would be, you know, in this realm? And I would say, you know, the next guy that's interesting to me is Preston Williams, wide receiver out of Colorado State, who was a former five-star recruit at Tennessee. And then he left and transferred. And Williams is, you know, he's one of those tall, thin wideouts that, you know, puts you in the range of AJ Green and Justin Hunter in terms of body type, 6'4", 210. Okay. And when I watched him, it was because I had a show with Lance Zierlein, you know, I don't know, several months ago. And we talked about some of the prospects that he liked early on. And he talked about Olabisi Johnson. So I went to go watch Olabisi Johnson. And certainly he's a nice receiver, but I don't really necessarily agree with Lance that he's a guy that really stands out big time for me. The guy that kept popping off the film was Preston Williams. Watching him go up and win the ball in the air, he was very graceful. He knew how to position his body against tight coverage. He could take a hit. He understood how to do the pull down and shield on those types of plays that are very common for the NFL in terms of fade routes and go routes and post routes against high-low coverage that it's going to converge on him. I also like the fact that he was good in the open field. It wasn't just about quickness and first step agility and the ability to make the first man miss. He could break multiple tackles. And now when I talk about tackles, I think about tackles in three categories. I think about reaches, wraps, and then combos of hits and wraps. You know, the best possible tackle you can have is when you can hit someone and wrap them up and then drive them. You know, that's a hard one to be able to break through for anybody. You could be Adrian Peterson, and if someone gets a running start and hits you square and is able to wrap you up and pick you up and keep their feet, you're going to go down on your back. You're going to go backwards most often, even if you're a little bit on the smaller side compared to where Peterson's at. Then the next area is the hit. You know, certainly you can, or, you know, it's either a hit or a wrap. You can hit somebody, but if you're not backing off with a wrap, then, you know, that balance or ability to counter with good leverage can eliminate that tackle. It's still a moderately tough thing to do. So that's not a bad, you know, if you can bounce off of hits or run through hits and break that type of a tackle, that's good. Same thing with a wrap. You know, if you're able to, you may not generate much force behind it, but if you're able to just wrap your arms around a body part and hold on tight, you know, if you're able to break through that, that's also impressive as compared to a reach. You know, some players go down because, you know, they're running through a crease and a 310-pound defensive tackle reaches his arm out, grabs the shoulder, and the guy loses his balance or is able to grab a leg and clip that defender and trip him up. You know, and that happens a lot. That's a cause for a lot of tackles. It's still important to be able to break all of those types of tackles. So I really have four if you think about it. It's, you know, hitting wraps, hits, wraps, and reaches. So when you think about Preston Williams in context of breaking tackles, he runs through a lot of reaches and wraps. And that's pretty impressive for a wide receiver, especially when he can do it multiple times within the same play and be able to, you know, create space for himself and run long distances, breaking multiple tackles. That shows some stamina in terms of the ability to, you know, football stamina in terms of running. It also just shows that strength that you're looking for and the agility and vision to eliminate direct contact as well. So really big fan of what he does, but he wasn't invited to the combine for a very specific reason. And that came out this week, which is that he was convicted of a misdemeanor charge of domestic violence. I think back in 2015. Okay. Now the intriguing thing about him is, you know, people are, is what he can do on the field. When we talk about the off the field stuff, if you're new to the RSB cast, I would strongly suggest listening to my podcast with Bob Harris at Football Diehards or Daniel Simpkins from Football Guys, who is a licensed therapist, social worker who conducts therapy and works with the segment of population who often has been convicted of domestic violence or dealt with issues where they've been convicted of certain types of crimes and violent crimes that society obviously looks down upon, rightfully so. But, you know, he had a very nuanced, he and I had a very nuanced discussion about this. And just to kind of give you my thoughts on it is this: the NFL is not the legal system. What I think about domestic violence personally, and what I would like to see done about that, is very different than what I do in my profession. My profession is to evaluate talent. That's it. Not to be judge and jury about what happens off the field. You know, that's up to the decision makers on NFL teams of what they feel like they can deal with and not deal with. At the same time, you know, I also come from a family where, you know, my father-in-law's in law enforcement. My father-in-law's brother is also in law enforcement. My sister-in-law was in law enforcement. I've also have dealt with the impact of domestic violence in my life as someone who had witnessed it or had to prevent it from happening as a young person. So it's had a very strong impact on my life personally, in terms of that, in a way that I do have passionate feelings about it in terms of what I believe and what I would like to see done. But at the same time, what I've tried very much to do in my profession is to understand that a lot of these people are young people. People can grow from this. You know, it doesn't always happen, but they can grow from it. And at the same time, too, I look at the charge, you know, and there's a difference. There are shades of what is, you know, of domestic violence. And we look at Williams, you know, he was charged for shoving a woman who identified herself as his girlfriend. And I'm reading this from the Coloradan .com website. Who identified herself as his girlfriend and restrained her at one point by grabbing her arm while she was trying to leave an apartment the two shared. According to a Fort Collins police report, he was originally charged with harassment and tampering, both misdemeanors, with a domestic violence enhancement that the court records show. A protection order was issued in the case, and then Williams was arrested again for violating that order by placing approximately 200 phone calls to the woman. So you can see what he was. He pleaded guilty to the harassment charge and received a deferred sentence for March 5th, 2018. And the other charges against him were dropped at that time. So you're looking at this, and to me, that's a more nuanced charge than, say, him actually hitting someone. You know, so what he did was wrong. Absolutely, you know. But I look at this as different than, say, Tyreek Hill, who, you know, basically hit, punched, and strangled his pregnant girlfriend, you know, and Tyreek Hill wasn't invited to the combine either. Joe Mixon, what he did, he wasn't invited to the combine. There are several players who have high profile who are going to be drafted early, whether you like it or not, who have been involved with domestic violence and have committed domestic violence. And when you look at Williams here in the range of things that have happened, I look at this as more, extreme immaturity, and certainly calling someone 200 times can be scary, especially if you've been in, had arguments and you got grabbed and held against your will to not leave the house. You know, even if it was in the heat of the moment, you know, obviously wrong, but you know, you look at that in the scheme of things, and if everything else checks out, and I would bet that if he gets drafted, it's because I'll have talked to him and feel satisfied that this was one of those situations that he needed to grow up and grow out. And it's not a likelihood of him doing worse, similar or worse down the line. So we'll find, you know, we may never know that for sure, but teams will find that out, and good teams have strong law enforcement backgrounds, someone with a strong law enforcement background who's investigating this is going to be able to provide some information that will help project that. But that's kind of where I'm interested in, is because I think if it weren't for the law, if it weren't for the domestic violence issue and the fact that he's not going to be at the combine, I actually think he is one of the top receivers in this class, and he would be drafted as such. He's probably not going to be drafted as such, but how far he falls will be indicative, I think, of, you know, the team in terms of what teams find about him with his background. Is there more there with him, or is this, was this an instance where it was immaturity and he did something very wrong and he's been able to grow from it? And if that's the case, I think we may see him drafted within the first three, you know, probably second, third, or fourth round. I think if he's, if it's a real issue of, you know, on the level of, not real, that's not a good way of saying it. How about we say if it's a more serious issue in terms of there's more serious stuff in addition to what was there, maybe he's drafted in the bottom half of the draft, if at all. But, you know, you think about DeeDee Westbrook and Tyreek Hill who were drafted, and I would say the severity of what they did was much greater than what Williams did. So, you know, we'll leave that there. That's the other intriguing player on my list, Preston Williams. I think that he could become a primary receiver in the NFL if what he does off the field matches what he can do on the field. And if that's the case, then he should have a clean career and be good to go. Moving on, Jalen Hurd is another wide receiver that I'm really interested in. And Hurd was a former running back at Tennessee. He was also at Tennessee, former running back. And this guy, 6'4", 220 pounds, he's now, you know, he finished up at Baylor. And there's a whole story about whether, you know, he didn't want to play nicely with the team and whether he was a prima donna or not. And Tennessee kind of made him out to be the enemy and that he was the problem and he was an immature kid. And, you know, there's been much more of a push in terms of stories being fed out there in the news cycle now that maybe Tennessee was a little bit more of the issue and that Hurd, you know, played Hurd a lot and was their main guy at running back and just and wanted to play wide receiver, but they didn't want to give him that opportunity. So he made the choice to go elsewhere. And that's his right. I mean, you know, if you don't want to, you know, he's in college, you know, this isn't his profession. And if he wants to switch, then the consequences is you don't get a scholarship or you have to go somewhere else or you're not going to get to start, you know, at that team. So he was willing to make that change and deal with those consequences to play wide receiver. And watching him at Baylor, I'm intrigued with him as a wide receiver. I think that there's some real talent there with him. You can see that he accelerates well from breaks. He catches the ball with his hands away from his frame. I think he uses the active technique with his hands to really catch it at the earliest window and do it in a technically sound way. I think that, you know, he's someone that, you know, he has consistently strong acceleration and he can drop his weight when it comes to routes. So he can run the more difficult routes in the route tree, or at least has potential to really develop in that area as he continues to refine all of his routes. The fact that he can make that weight drop is going to be an important thing for his ability to learn. So I'm a real fan of that. And I think that he can block well. You know, his running back past makes him a good blocker, makes him a good runner, you know, in the open field as well. And he understands how to use that short area quickness and how to avoid angles, how to uppercut punch with as a blocker. I just think that there's times that, you know, when it comes to his skills as a wide receiver, he's still a little bit, you know, raw at certain times or unrefined. So he has to learn how to, you know, with certain routes, match certain types of attacks of the football. He's going to have to learn how to keep his feet under him with some of the moves that are more wide receiver-like and more specialized to that position than what he did at the running back position. And so that intrigues me alone, is that 6'4", 220, shows the athletic ability you want, shows a lot of the fundamental technical skills you want to see already, and he's picked them up pretty quickly. And the things that the mistakes that he seems to make are either things that just come with a little bit more time and experience, and not things that he would have to learn. You know, they're not bad habits, and they're not things that, oh, you better know it by now in order to play at this next level. So it's, to me, that's a good kind of baseline. And I talked about having those baseline fundamentals in a recent RSP article by Paris Hilton. That's about Paris Campbell and the Ohio State receiver, who I think is unrefined as a technician, but some of the base technical skills that he has are the type of things that bode well for him to grow. And I think Jalen Hurd's that way. But what also intrigues me about him is he's still a damn good running back. Like, they used him in short yardage, goal line situations, sometimes to close out games at Baylor. And he just looks so good at that position. He just doesn't want to play it. But he's someone that, you know, he's got patience. He has good feet. He understands he can break tackles. I mean, he's 6'4", 220. You know, he can break tackles. He's a guy that understands how the blocking schemes work. I understand why he was a top prospect at that position. And I remember watching him and studying him 2 years ago for the NFL draft as a running back. And he was one of my higher graded players in that class with the Fournettes and McCaffreys and the Alvin Kamaras. He was in that range of players that you would put into that consideration of they could be a starter one day at this position, even for that extreme height. So I'm interested if teams are going to ask him, would you consider playing running back again? We'd really like to see you at running back. And I think what's intriguing is to see what his answer will be and what he's willing to do, because there were some teams that looked at Chris Warren III for the Oakland Raiders, and they were asking him, are you willing to be a tight end? You know, we don't know if you can be a running back. He says, you know, are you willing to do what you want to do? And he really wanted to be a running back. And he said that, but then as time got closer, he kind of equivocated and said that he'd be willing to try a different position if running back didn't work out. But I think it's going to work out for him in Oakland. At least he's going to get another chance to really show it in 2019 this summer. So Jalen Hurd, we've got Preston Williams, Darwin Thompson. Next guy that's really interesting to me is a small school kid out of University of Alabama, Birmingham, Xavier Ubosi. Xavier Ubosi is, I think he's about 6'4", 250, no, 6'3", 218. That's what his measurements are. And he kind of reminds me a little bit of Michael Thomas. Now, when I say that, I'm saying stylistically, not talent-wise. But he's not unbelievably fast, but he runs routes pretty well. He's someone that can get deep on defenders because of the fact that he can drop his weight, because he can be physical at the right moment. He catches the ball with good technique. He's someone that has that just a good combination of abilities to work, you know, in terms of how would I best put this? It's the best combinations of being able to work routes both in the middle and in the perimeter. And so watching him, I'd say, you know, the pads over the knees are right when it comes off the line of scrimmage. You know, he can break wraps. He has a very good release move in terms of being able to use his arm over and do it physically. His breaks are flat already. I think he elevates well to high point the ball. He comes back to the football on his breaks. So he can, not only is it flat, but he can work back and attack. So he understands the urgency involved with route running. He understands how to use his hands actively as a receiver, and he has boundary awareness. He needs to get a little bit better at his technique, but it's still there. I think he hustles and makes good recoveries when there's issues, like he slips during a break. He can recover and still be able to make a play. I think that he has a pretty good catch radius. And watch him against Northern Illinois. I mean, shoot, 12 targets. He had 7 catches, 1 difficult reception, 227 yards, including 85 yards after the catch and 3 touchdowns. So, you know, I'd like to see him do a little bit better in terms of carrying the football. He can carry it a little bit too wide. Sometimes he carries it like a loaf of bread. He has to work on his punch as a blocker. He needs to learn how to jump back for the ball at its highest point on fade routes a little bit more and refine that body positioning when to do that. He doesn't always make the most sudden breaks. He can drop the weight, which is a good thing, you know, to be able to get to that stop, but he needs to learn how to take that one long step so that he can really decelerate fast. And when he can do that, he's going to get open a lot more. So this Xavier Bosey, 6'3", 218, and he had a pretty good all-star game, I think, for the NFLPA Bowl. And so I'm interested to see if he gets a combine invite or just to, again, to look at what his times are in terms of his 20 shuttle, three cone drill, broad jump, and 40 time. And if he can show with the short area acceleration that he has enough of that to ride the NFL ride, I'm going to be really intrigued with what happens with him as a, maybe a later round pick or a undrafted free agent. Two guys left on my list here. Okay. And of those two guys left on my list, let's start with Trevon Wesco. Now, Trevon Wesco is listed as a fullback, got to the Senior Bowl, and I talked a little bit about him last week, you know, in terms of what he can do. But watching his tape at 6'4", 274, he's the heaviest tight end of the back of the tight ends that I've watched, and he's a tight end. He's not a fullback. He can play that. He can be your H-back technically, and there may be some teams that will use him as such because he's quick and he's agile and he's mobile, and there's some differences for all those things. But the mobility, the ability to drop his weight like a wide receiver and run whip routes, that was just really impressive to me that I talked about in some of the Senior Bowl podcasts, is that when you can run a whip route and you're tall or you're really heavy and you can do that with quickness, man, that's an asset. That just tells you how athletic that player really is on the field. That's a good indication of that. And he did that at the Senior Bowl. He can post up on you. He can get separation in the intermediate range of the field. So some of these sail routes he can run, he's going to be able to run some over routes and be able to get separation there. Seam routes, I think he's not going to have too much of a problem with. He tracks the ball well, but he's so fluid after the catch, and he's strong. So when you take that fluid ability and you put that into the equation, it's a very enticing skill set. Adam Shaheen was a guy who gained a lot of weight. The joke was, you know, about him saying that he got to 270 pounds because he ate Chipotle and hung out in the weight room after being kind of a basketball star who went to Ashland and was kind of, you know, somewhere in the low 200 range. Well, Wesco was a former quarterback at about 204 pounds and worked, you know, through the JUCO circuit and worked and ended up having a growth spurt and also can obviously worked out in the weight room and became not only a tight end or H-back, but he became a player that Dana Holgorsen, the former West Virginia coach, said literally was a guy that he could spend the entire press conferences talking about this year because of how much Wesco has improved as a player and that his blocking alone was good enough to say that he was a part of the West Virginia offensive line. That, you know, it wasn't that he was a good blocker for a wing back or a H back or a tight end. He was literally another functioning part of that offensive line. That's how good he's been in that regard. And that's important even for folks who are thinking about players in a fantasy oriented lens, because they need to be able to get on the field. And, you know, there aren't a lot of teams that just say, you know what, we're going to use an Evan Engram type. I mean, that's nice to say, but there aren't many teams that are just going to say, you're just our wide receiver. And if you are, they're not going to be on the field all the time because there's slot receivers that may do the job a little bit better. And they don't, you know, in certain situations. So they may end up being just kind of matchup plays or certain scheme dependent players. But Wesco has a chance to be a real versatile weapon for a team because of the fact that he can be used on the wing. He can be used as the front man in the eye. You can put him in line, or you can split him off and put him in the slot, and he can do some work for you in that regard. So I think about a guy like Rob Gronkowski and what he meant to the Patriots. He's meant to the Patriots. And if, you know, the Patriots, you know, this is recorded before the Super Bowl. If he retires after the Super Bowl, or that seems like a possibility, you know, maybe a Trevon Wesco is a guy that the Patriots might be interested in this spring. I think that he's going to go surprisingly high in this draft, and I wouldn't be, and I think that a combine performance that turns out to be really good, or a really strong pro day performance, elevates him into the early rounds. And when I say early rounds, I'm thinking second, third, or fourth round for a tight end. And that's pretty good in a class that's highlighted by guys like TJ Hockenson, Irv Smith Jr., Jay Sternberger, Dawson Knox, Noah Font, you know, Wesco. Look, I like Wesco better than Font right now. And there are a lot of people who think Font is like the best tight end in this class. He's certainly a nice receiving option who's played for a team that demands their tight ends to block. But, you know, that's another story, because I would take TJ Hockenson, you know, 8 days a week, you know, in comparison. But Fant's still a nice player. But Wesco, he's certainly in that higher range. And then the final player that I want to talk about is a running back again. We're going to talk about running back. And why he intrigues me is I think he will definitely be invited to the combine. If he isn't, I'm going to have to really question what the heck is going on with the committee here. And that's Boise State running back Alexander Madison. Madison's 5'11", 211. And he reminds me a little bit of, if you took Jamal Williams of the Packers and Aaron Jones of the Packers and put them together and kind of took the best qualities of both, and then maybe you had, you know, maybe Williams being a little bit slower and bigger and stronger, slowed down a little bit of what Jones has to offer in terms of his long speed, but the burst is still, you know, obviously better of that amalgamation. That's Alexander Madison to me. Madison is a guy who has good burst. He has decent long speed. I want to see how much, though. Is it just the minimum to ride the ride and be kind of more of a committee guy like Williams has shown thus far? Or is it something more? Is it more of a breakaway, more on the Jones end of the spectrum? He can catch the ball well. I think he is one of the more, how would I best put it, one of the more mature runners, one of the more aware runners in terms of processing information behind the line of scrimmage and being able to, you know, execute footwork that gets him out of trouble. And he does that trouble that his offensive line or good defensive line play brings to him early in a play. And he's a guy that can carry the load. I watched a 40 carry game against Fresno State in the snow, and he looked fantastic in that game. I mean, certainly the run blocking was really strong, and the weather conditions can oftentimes help the offense. But I liked the physical play that he showed, and he's someone that's, you know, not just agile. He can get the pads low, and he can deliver the push. He can break tackles. He doesn't lean on just one move. He's someone that can, you know, really set defenders up. And there's just a overall savvy about his game that he could easily wind up one of my top three backs in this class. And obviously there are a number of players that people think, you know, that many people would say would be better than him or going to be rated higher than him. And those are guys like, I bet, Damian Harris or Elijah Holyfield or Devin Singletary. Those guys are getting a lot of love. And right now, the way I have it, you know, I've still got more to watch of Madison and more to watch some of these other guys too. I mean, I've watched a fair bit of tape on all these guys already, but there's a point that when you get to the higher end of your rankings, the margin of difference between these players becomes smaller and smaller. So if there's one or two things that you're still looking for from that player, or to try and verify that what you've seen in the past is consistent or not, and you want to watch more games for that, that one thing or those two things can make a big difference in the top range of your rankings. And I think that's something that people don't always understand, but I can kind of give you that setup with my players, because I'm not going to tell you who right now, but when I look at my top 10 backs. There's literally 2 points in my grading system between the number 10 back and the number 4 back. Okay. 3 points between the number 3 back and the number 10 back. You know, and that's a pretty small range. Really, that's one or two things that I look for, the difference in tiers in terms of how good they are at those things. And if they're a little, you know, if they meet the criteria for being at a higher tier, then they're going to get more points or vice versa. So there's a little bit of play there. And some of the things that I'm looking for to factor into that are going to be what happens at the combine or the pro day workouts in terms of speed and acceleration, where those things can be a little bit more difficult to assess. You know, think about Nick Chubb once again. Nick Chubb, everyone said, didn't have the athletic ability to be a breakaway player and therefore wasn't an elite player anymore or elite prospect anymore. But then we look at this combine performance, it was just as strong as pretty much anybody's. It wasn't that far away from Saquon Barkley's. And I said that all winter and all summer. And I had a lot of people telling me I was an idiot. And, you know, that's par for the course in my job, in my career. But, you know, it won't be the first time, won't be the last. Sometimes it will be earned. And sometimes, like this one, it was, you know, it was definitely not earned, you know, in terms of that label. I turned out looking all right with that one. But that's the point I'm making, is that those differences are small. And so this time of year is, you know, the workouts help because it adds that important layer to kind of go back and say, all right, does that speed work in the context of what they do? You know, what kind of runner are they? Are they the type of runner where, you know, if you're a gap player, and let's use running back as an example, if you're a gap runner, you're going to be using a gap scheme where the job is to accelerate as quickly as possible and hit one crease and try not to slow down, and you're just trying to manipulate one little area most of the time. Well, that's great for speedy backs, and you're going to want to see guys with top 40 times and good acceleration, because they're going to use little change of direction, stop start type of speed. They're going to be really just hitting that crease and trying to hit it hard. So a guy like Leonard Fournette is a really good example of that, or David Johnson was a really good example of that early on in his career, or Marlon Mack even. Guys who, that, you know, if they hit that crease and they only have one choice to make, they can be a really great fit for a team in that scheme. So you're going to value 40 time a little bit more with them than you would with a guy like a Peyton Barber, you know, or even a Nick Chubb or a Saquon Barkley, who, while they had great 40 times, the two of those three guys, you know, or Devonta Freeman, for example. You don't need a great 40 time if you're Devonta Freeman running inside outside zone, where it's more about stop start agility and acceleration. If you have the good stop start agility and acceleration, you're creating more in the way that a zone play asks you to do, which oftentimes is to be slow towards the crease and then fast to it, because you're setting up a cutback or a bounce out more often than you are in a gap play, where it's more about setting up that one crease, and it means you're not going to slow down as much. You're actually trying to gear up. So that kind of gives you an idea about some of the things that I look at there. So Madison, I want to, you know, kind of get confirmation of some of his numbers and see just how good those numbers are, because that can make a small difference between, you know, where I have him ranked on my board, and because of, there's such a small margin of error there, or small margin of difference with those guys in terms of their scores. So those are my guys that I find most intriguing. Running back Darwin Thompson of Utah State, Preston Williams, wide receiver from Colorado State, Baylor's Jalen Hurd, former wide receiver. Could he be a running back again? I don't know. You know, the part of me that loves running backs would like to see him do that, but I'm hoping for him to be as good a wide receiver as he wants to be. Xavier Obosi, another wide receiver from University of Alabama, Birmingham. And then Trevon Wesco, the tight end from West Virginia. And rounding it out, Boise State running back Alexander Madison. So thanks again for listening to the RSP cast. I'm going to have some good guests on coming up pretty soon here. I'm hoping down the line, you know, a good buddy of mine who, you know, we share a couch together occasionally, I think you know who that is, will hopefully come on and join me, and we'll talk a little NFL draft as well. So thanks again for listening.